Chapter 25. Madame de Chantel sighed out a recognition of the difficulty. I haven't a word to say against Miss Viner, but she's knocked about so, as it's called, that she must have been mixed up with some rather dreadful people. If only Owen could be made to see that, if one could get at a few facts, I mean. She says, for instance, that S.E. has a sister, but it seems she doesn't even know her address. If she does, she may not want to give it to you. I dare say the sister's one of the dreadful people. I've no doubt that with a little time you could rake up dozens of them. Have her traced, as they call it in detective stories. I don't think you'd frighten Owen, but you might. It's natural enough he should have been corrupted by those foreign ideas. You might even manage to part him from the girl, but you couldn't keep him from being in love with her. I saw that when I looked them over last evening. I said to myself, it's a real old-fashioned American case, as sweet and sound as homemade bread. Well, if you take his loaf away from him, what are you going to feed him with instead? Which of your nasty Paris poisons do you think he'll turn to? Supposing you succeed in keeping him out of a really bad mess, and, knowing the young man as I do, I rather think that, at this crisis, the only way to do it would be to marry him slap off to somebody else. Well then, who, may I ask, would you pick out? One of your sweet French ingenues, I suppose? With as much mind as a minnow, and as much snap as a soft-boiled egg. You might hustle him into that kind of marriage. I dare say you could, but if I know Owen, the natural thing would happen before the first baby was weaned. I don't know why you insinuate such odious things against Owen. Do you think it would be odious of him to return to his real love, when he'd been forcibly parted from her? At any rate, it's what your French friends do, every one of them. Only they don't generally have the grace to go back to an old love. And I believe, upon my word, Owen would. Madame de Chantel looked at her with a mixture of awe and exultation. Of course you realize, Adelaide, that in suggesting this, you're insinuating the most shocking things against Miss Viner? When I say that, if you part two young things who are dying to be happy in the lawful way, it's 10-1 they'll come together in an unlawful one. I'm insinuating shocking things against you, Lucretia Mary, in suggesting for a moment that you'll care to assume such a responsibility before your maker. And you wouldn't, if you talked things straight out with him, instead of merely sending him messages through a miserable sinner like yourself. Darrow expected this assault on her adopted creed to provoke in Madame de Chantel an explosion of pious indignation. But to his surprise she merely murmured, "Colin, I don't know what Mr. Darrow'll think of you." "Mr. Darrow probably knows his Bible as well as I do," Miss Painter calmly rejoined, adding a moment later, without the least perceptible change of voice or expression, "Colin, I suppose you've heard that Gissel de Falembre's husband accuses her of being mixed up with the Duc d'Arcachon in that business of trying to sell a lot of imitation pearls to Mrs. Homer Pond, the Chicago woman the Duke's engaged to. It seems the jeweler says Gissel brought Mrs. Pond there, and got 25%, which of course she passed on to d'Arcachon. The poor old Duchess is in a fearful state, so afraid her son'll lose Mrs. Pond. When I think that Gissel is old Bradford Wagstaff's granddaughter, I'm thankful he's safe in Mount Auburn." XXII, it was not until late that afternoon that Darrow could claim his postponed hour with Anna. When at last he found her alone in her sitting room, it was with a sense of liberation so great that he sought no logical justification of it. He simply felt that all their destinies were in Miss Painter's grasp, and that, resistance being useless, he could only enjoy the sweets of surrender. Anna herself seemed as happy, and for more explicable reasons. As he had assisted, after luncheon, at another debate between Madame de Chantel and her confidant, and had surmised, when she withdrew from it, that victory was permanently perched on Miss Painter's banners. "I don't know how she does it, unless it's by the dead weight of her convictions. She detests the French, so that she'd back up Owen, even if she knew nothing, or knew too much of Miss Viner. She somehow regards the match as a protest against the corruption of European morals. I told Owen, that was his great chance, and he's made the most of it. What a tactician you are. You make me feel that I hardly know the rudiments of diplomacy. Darrow smiled at her, abandoning himself to a perilous sense of well-being. She gave him back his smile. I'm afraid I think nothing short of my own happiness is worth wasting any diplomacy on. That's why I mean to resign from the service of my country, he rejoined with a laugh of deep content. The feeling that both resistance and apprehension were vain was working like wine in his veins. He had done what he could to deflect the course of events. Now he could only stand aside and take his chance of safety. Underneath this fatalistic feeling was the deep sense of relief that he had, after all, said and done nothing that could in the least degree affect the welfare of Sophie Viner. That fact took a millstone off his neck. Meanwhile, he gave himself up once more to the joy of Anna's presence. They had not been alone together for 2 long days, and he had the lover's sense that he had forgotten, or at least underestimated, the strength of the spell she cast. Once more her eyes and her smile seemed to bound his world. He felt that their light would always move with him as the sunset moves before a ship at sea. The next day his sense of security was increased by a decisive incident. It became known to the expectant household that Madame de Chantel had yielded to the tremendous impact of Miss Painter's determination, and that Sophie Viner had been sent for to the purple satin sitting room. At luncheon, Owen's radiant countenance proclaimed the happy sequel, and Darrow, when the party had moved back to the Oak Room for coffee, deemed it discreet to wander out alone to the terrace with his cigar. The conclusion of Owen's romance brought his own plans once more to the front. Anna had promised that she would consider dates and settle details as soon as Madame de Chantel and her grandson had been reconciled, and Darrow was eager to go into the question at once, since it was necessary that the preparations for his marriage should go forward as rapidly as possible. Anna, he knew, would not seek any farther pretext for delay, and he strolled up and down contentedly in the sunshine, certain that she would come out and reassure him as soon as the reunited family had claimed its due share of her attention. But when she finally joined him, her first word was for the younger lovers. "I want to thank you for what you've done for Owen," she began, with her happiest smile. "Who I?" he laughed. "Are you confusing me with Miss Painter?" "Perhaps I ought to say for me," she corrected herself. "You've been even more of a help to us than Adelaide." "My dear child, what on earth have I done?" "You've managed to hide from Madame de Chantel that you don't really like poor Sophie." Darrow felt the pallor in his cheek. "I like her? What put such an idea into your head?" "Oh, it's more than an idea, it's a feeling. But what difference does it make, after all? You saw her in such a different setting that it's natural you should be a little doubtful. But when you know her better, I'm sure you'll feel about her as I do. It's going to be hard for me not to feel about everything as you do." "Well, then please begin with my daughter-in-law." He gave her back in the same tone of banter, Colin agreed. "If you will agree to feel as I do about the pressing necessity of our getting married. I want to talk to you about that too. You don't know what a weight is off my mind. With Sophie here for good, I shall feel so differently about leaving Effie. I've seen much more accomplished governesses to my cost, but I've never seen a young thing more gay and kind and human. You must have noticed, though you've seen them so little together, how Effie expands when she's with her. And that, you know, is what I want. Madame de Chantel will provide the necessary restraint." She clasped her hands on his arm. "Yes, I'm ready to go with you now. But first of all, this very moment, you must come with me to Effie. She knows, of course, nothing of what's been happening, and I want her to be told first about you." Effie, sought throughout the house, was presently traced to the schoolroom, and thither Darrow mounted with Anna. He had never seen her so alight with happiness, and he had caught her buoyancy of mood. He kept repeating to himself, it's over," as if some monstrous midnight hallucination had been routed by the return of day. As they approached the schoolroom door, the terrier's barks came to them through laughing remonstrances. "She's giving him his dinner," Anna whispered, her hand in Darrow's. "Don't forget the goldfish," they heard another voice call out. Darrow halted on the threshold. "H, not now."
"Not now?
I mean she'd rather have you tell her first. I'll wait for you both downstairs." He was aware that she glanced at him intently. "S.U. please. I'll bring her down at once." She opened the door, and as she went in he heard her say, "No, Sophie, don't go. I want you both." The rest of Darrow's day was a succession of empty and agitating scenes. On his way down to Giver, before he had seen Effie Leith, he had pictured somewhat sentimentally the joy of the moment when he should take her in his arms and receive her first filial kiss. Everything in him that egotistically craved for rest, stability, a comfortably organized middle age, all the home-building instincts of the man who has sufficiently wooed and wandered, combined to throw a charm about the figure of the child who might, who should have been his. Effie came to him trailing the cloud of glory of his first romance, giving him back the magic hour he had missed and mourned. And how different the realization of his dream had been. The child's radiant welcome, her unquestioning acceptance of this new figure in the family group, had been all that he had hoped and fancied. If Mother was so awfully happy about it, and Owen and Granny too, how nice and cozy and comfortable it was going to be for all of them, her beaming look seemed to say. And then, suddenly, the small pink fingers he had been kissing were laid on the one flaw in the circle, on the one point which must be settled before Effie could, with complete unqualified assurance, admit the newcomer to full equality with the other gods of her Olympus. "And is Sophie awfully happy about it too?" as he had asked, loosening her hold on Darrow's neck to tilt back her head and include her mother in her questioning look. "Why, dearest, didn't you see she was?" Anna had exclaimed, leaning to the group with radiant eyes. "I think I should like to ask her," the child rejoined, after a minute's shy consideration. And as Darrow set her down, her mother laughed cold and do, "Darling, do. Run off at once, and tell her we expect her to be awfully happy to." The scene had been succeeded by others less poignant, but almost as trying. Darrow cursed his luck in having, at such a moment, to run the gauntlet of a houseful of interested observers. The state of being engaged, in itself an absurd enough predicament, even to a man only intermittently exposed, became intolerable under the continuous scrutiny of a small circle quivering with participation. Darrow was furthermore aware that, though the case of the other couple ought to have made his own less conspicuous, it was rather they who found a refuge in the shadow of his prominence. Madame de Chantelle, though as he had consented to Owen's engagement and formally welcomed his betrothed, was nevertheless not sorry to show, by her reception of Darrow, of what finely shaded degrees of cordiality she was capable. Miss Painter, having won the day for Owen, was also free to turn her attention to the newer candidate for her sympathy, and Darrow and Anna found themselves immersed in a warm bath of sentimental curiosity. It was a relief to Darrow that he was under a positive obligation to end his visit within the next 48 hours. When he left London, his ambassador had accorded him a 10-day leave. His fate being definitely settled and openly published, he had no reason for asking to have the time prolonged, and when it was over he was to return to his post till the time fixed for taking up his new duties. Anna and he had therefore decided to be married in Paris a day or two before the departure of the steamer which was to take them to South America, and Anna, shortly after his return to England, was to go up to Paris and begin her own Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.